four weapons.
X4?
No, Fritz X. Correction, on the Fritz X, right. X4, SD-1400X, the Fritz X weapon on the British battle cruiser Fight, and the Italian ship Vittorio. Was that a battleship also? 35,000 tons. It would be desired to get copies somehow of these photographs.
Good doing. Oh, you got any occupancy opens like that?
Yeah. Well,
would you prefer to say the in German for any reason? Because
I can do it in English too.
Okay.
But, what do you prefer?
It's up to you, because the two girls are doing this. They're both German.
But why is it better to...
But they're living in the United States, so they're bilingual. Well, you tell them, practice your English pretty much.
I studied at the Technical University in Munich, aeronautics and aircraft engineering. Finished this up in 36 and then changed to the former DCL at Berlin Upper Flop in order to get an additional scientific and technical training, which included also the training for test pilots. This was the so-called career of a Flugbauführer, which I terminated in 39 with the second state examination as a, what they called, Flugbaumeister. Already a year before, I joined the German Air Force test base at Peenemünde, was later 38, and have been active there throughout the war up to the end of April 1940. In the beginning, as a test pilot and test engineer for automatic controlled or remote controlled guided weapons, such as the development of the Henschel 293 or the T1 or air-to-air rockets. And so on. By then, I was part of the testing group for those guided missiles and the rocket-driven aircraft Messerschmitt 123, which, however, I personally never had flown.
Never.
Yeah. But members of my test group has been doing that. This was the time at Peenemünde. More details of what we have done, you can have for this paper I gave you, and from the books which are already available, so that I don't have to talk to you on more details after the war.
Well, how did you leave Peenemünde? What were the circumstances in which you left Peenemünde?
Air Force test group left Peenemünde in the middle of April 45 and changed its location to Peenemünde, and this was the final stage of the war, and I flew some of the greater planes. That is the more important test flight from Peenemünde to Bremerhaven or Northolt, including jet-driven airplanes.
No, the
262? Not the 262, but the Arado.
Oh, the Arado.
Which then was used during the last days of April 45 for missions to Berlin in order to support the people there. Yeah. These had been the circumstances, and then we had been taken into a British prisonership, or not the proper word, internierung.
Intern. They interned.
Intern, yeah. Well, I had then been for weeks in prison for interrogation purposes during summer 45, and had been left out of the Western of the Nearong in February 46, when I did some work for my own up to 48. I picked up mathematical investigation of new structures of new construct in Bremerhaven, and changed then in 49 to Munich, from which I had got a call in order to take part in the building up of the office.
I see. That's about as far, actually, as I would go in this thing, about 1940. Let me ask you, do you have any particular stories or events of great interest to you during the testing of these weapons? I mean, I'd like to get some of the first-hand accounts of the major problems that you had, or major successes, or how they were used successfully, and the kind of thing that you might not publish in a technical report.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that time, there had been a lot of fascinating occasions, especially for a young engineer connected to this flight. I did a lot in flight and testing of what now is called JTOS, rocket, launch support for heavy aircraft, which we did with liquid rockets of the Spalter type, so-called cold
peroxide,
and later on with hot engines and with high temperature up to 1500 kilogram during the time of 30 seconds, which was quite a fascinating thing during the testing phase, because some of them didn't work properly and exploded, and there was some trouble during the starting phase. One of nice happening was when I one time came back with a 217 from a test flight into the airport of Peenemünde. Just at this moment had been launched a T2 on the side of the left, and this launch T2 didn't work very well. Came into the opposite direction with my airport and fell down directly on the airport, making a great hole and destroyed some of our planes.
I've got pictures of those planes. Destroyed.
Yeah.
We're looking at
them.
Did you get ready to launch something against the Army after that?
No, we had been cooperating very good. Another time we had a C-1 here. We had dropped it from from one of our planes. I think it was a SW-200. DP-1 hit it back and flew at a constant height. Altitude, however, permanently circling over the area.
I never heard that one.
And we had to wait. We had to wait some 25 minutes until the fuel was burned, and then we had to wait where it would come. It was great luck that it did not come down in a populated area. Fascinating thing. Launched a 293 guided missile of the Henschel aircraft works. It also didn't function very well, and was crossing the settlement where all the families lived, and came up over to Peru, and finally came down the railway station at the settlement. Well, everything really went well in Peenemünde, though we had a lot of dangerous work to do. And, well, some of the things, for example, was that we had a launch site for the B-1 at the north side of the Peenemünde area. And type engine of the B-1 lurking with a frequency of 48 to 50 hertz was so strong to its actual physical noise that some of the laborants or workers at the launch site suffered from actual physical pain in the stomach area and brought into the hospital. Because of the pressure vibration. Well, this was only one of the things that happened.
Yeah, those things are all interesting.
And another time, early in 45, I had to make a flight test from a Junkers 88 in order to test a age. We had been three in this plane, and I was a pilot and launched the missile, and we had at that time a propulsion unit in this rocket, which was a two-stage rocket. First, ground stage for launching from the aircraft, and after 2 or 3 seconds, changed to what we call the cruising propulsion engine, out of both solid propellant, and the switching over from the launch propellant unit to the cruising propellant unit, a dangerous thing because of the overgang from gross enduring matter to flying enduring matter. And I had launched this engine, and some 6 or 10 meters before the airplane, it exploded. And some of the larger parts came into the propeller area, and one of the propeller plates took a piece of a foot length or so, pushed it into the cabin of the aircraft, just where I was sitting. It was a strange situation because I went away for a couple of seconds, and waked up my two colleagues were just trying to leave the airplane with their parachute. Coming awake, I had the feeling that one of the engines were running wrong. Was running wrong, and I shut it down. I didn't see anything because everything was full of blood. However, I told the other ones they should stay in the aircraft. We would land safely. We gave a message down to our ground base, and landed. Such things happened during such activities.
Did you have any experience of these particular flights on these battleships?
I've never been in active operational use of those missiles. However, I was in very close contact to the military which used these missiles in order to make them known what is important in connection with the child, and we had teaching areas for them and teaching lessons, and we made films, one of which is available during the British Embassy. It is the Einsatz in der Heist 293, a teaching film for the crews of the operational aircraft. It was quite interesting, yeah. Yeah, well there are a lot of stories like that.
Did you, let's see, you worked with a V-1, with a Mag, you worked really a lot of stuff. What was your actual position as far as, did you have all these under one, or?
No.
How was that place organized?
The Air Force, takes the responsible to the Air Ministry at Berlin. It was one of the test stations among Reglin, the Tarnewitz, and the Neusen, and Pinnewitz.
That was one of them.
Was one of them, especially for rocketry and static missiles. It was actually also a Pinnewitz. It was organized in various groups, which each of which is supervised a special type of the whole activity. For example, the group E2 supervised the development of project as a system. The E3 group supervised the propellant, the propulsion unit, and their development. The E4 was dealing with the equipment, with the electronic equipment, the guidance and control, and so on. And finally, the EA was dealing with the ground installation and ground support equipment for the missile. Now, the tech base had in the first, during the first year, a civil, the head of the tech base. However, later on, it was he was substituted by a military person when the war went on. It was in 40 or 41, the civil head was substituted. Well, most of us been civil engineers. Some of the engineers had been taken over into the Engineer Corps of the Air Force. However, we had nearly no military personnel at the total base, except during the very late stages of the war. Well, this organization had been staying in very close contact with the other tech bases responsible to the Air Ministry. There had been frequent conferences with the Air Ministry. So this group E2 for the system had been built up by Mr. Haas, who just was yesterday evening here.
Oh, Mr. Haas? How do you spell his name,
eh? H-A-R-E-Z.
Morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Well,
this is a story about
This is a story that appeared originally in Stern magazine about the escape of prisoners from Peenemünde during the war.
Yeah, well, one day I came back with a Dornier to 217 from a test flight and located after landing at the border of the airport, and went back to the tower with my parachute on the back, and a member of the crew, what we call Borgwart, was accompanying me, and during we were walking back, I saw a Heinkel 111 with high-speed running engines crossing the airport, which was very soft because of much rain and snow at the time, and apparently was trying to start. However, it failed, it came not up and was pushed down to the runway, turned around 180 degrees and went back on and tried it another time. And I asked my crew member what boy is sitting there, and the aircraft seems to be like a man who was taking part very often in starts of aircraft, but never did it himself. And we watched it, and finally he came aloft, however, several times being pushed back to the runway, and eventually he flew over the Peenemünde River and disappeared. We went quickly to the tower, and I asked the aircraft was flying, because I didn't hear that another one would fly at that time, and nobody knew it, and there was a large investigation which unit this Heinkel 11 possibly might have had a mission to fly. However, nothing was mentioned, where nothing was, nobody had been informed, and so they made an investigating tour around the airport and found the people who had to watch some prisoners, some Polish prisoners, who had been working at the airport, dead. Had been geschlagen, beaten with a gun. Well, and then it became apparent that those prisoners had taken the aircraft and started and apparently flew, and some airplanes had been sent after, but never got it. And after the war, we heard that the pilot of this aircraft came down with the aircraft safely in near Danzig, near Danzig, at least in the Russian occupied zone, and he survived. And, so it was a strange thing. He was for a while with the prisoners who had been working in Finland, and took the opportunity to escape. Well, it was the first hand.
who told the story?
No,
I mean, how did the story come out a couple of years ago?
One of the journalists had heard about it, went around and followed it up, and he met with the pilot.
He met with the pilot.